on this episode of Pottages.
Why am I told that Yoshino is a top DATS agent when she's totally sidelined once any dude bros come? Like,
yeah.
I'm remembering why I didn't end up finishing watching this.
Asher's favorite moment.
My favorite moment was when it ended.
That's mean.
To be fair, this is an incredibly terrible question.
I need a password. You can use mine to get on the internet. What did you
Welcome to Pottages, episode 501, Agumon and Knuckles.
Digimon Data Squad, DATS, intro part 1.
Recorded October 15th, 2017.
Pottages is your critically nostalgic analytical tour through the Digimon anime. I'm Jeff Ruberg, and I'm joined by our own local ultimate fighter, Ashton McDonald.
It's fighting time, apparently.
The co-host, so frustrated by our bickering, he drilled a hole to the digital world, Asher Zoffman.
I think that is the most accurate description I've ever heard of me and Ash ever.
Sadly.
I couldn't decide when writing that, like if I should write to the digital world or to Israel, because...
Same difference. Yep.
And the silent DATS agent in the background of every shot that doesn't say anything until the next arc, Andrew Zoffman.
I'm just waiting for my pension because I'm the best employee.
This week, we're looking at the first part of the DATS intro arc of Digimon Data Squad with episodes 1-5. So here's a quick recap.
In episode 1, there are monsters among us, aka I'm woven it. Local, apparently a middle schooler, Marcus Damon, Damon, beats up some nerds, recruits a dinosaur into his Yakuza gang, and punches a Kakaturimon to make some McDonald's chicken nuggets.
In episode 2, Marcus's inner strength, aka Yoshino's inner Marcus episode, Punchy Tai tries to hide his new lifestyle from his family, but Yoshino forces Agumon to come out of the closet. Yoshi, not Sora, tries to save Christie's school from an off-brand bee drill, but gets upstaged by Marcus.
In episode 3, The Return of Thomas, aka Flame on You, Punchy Tai is sad that he can't punch fire, and then is sad that he can't punch his new senpai. Pretentious Matt tries to save the city from some Final Fantasy bombs, but gets upstaged by Marcus.
In episode 4, the new team of Marcus and Thomas, aka A Bitter Drill, Punchy Tai and Snooty Matt are forced to team up because they're in the opening song together, despite wanting to murder each other. But at least it's not as bad as the bickering between Taiora fans and Serato fans.
In episode 5, Digital World, Here We Come, aka This Is Not a Drill, Grandiloquent Matt goes into the digital world to mercilessly hunt down and murder an enemy that had fled and stopped causing any harm, but is upstaged by Marcus. Thomas is won over by Marcus's charms once Marcus throws him off a cliff while he's unable to walk.
So, what do we all think of this arc?
It's okay.
It's okay?
It sucks.
I have no brother.
Okay, so to establish things, Andrew said it's okay. Ashley and Asher, the Ashes, are upset by that.
I'm not, you can all have your own opinions. I just think it sucks.
Objectively.
I thought it was pretty good.
Oh, shut up. I have, you know what, we're done. I break up
all
with
right,
you.
Ashley, yeah, I'm off this podcast.
I'm gonna go date Asher now, and
we're gonna move in with me in Bat Yam.
Yeah,
learn Hebrew.
We're gonna not like Digimon Data Squad.
This is the basis of a beautiful relationship.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, any other first impressions? I mean, this is our first impression of the season. I mean, Ashley, did you see past this before? I think you must have seen a little bit past this, right?
I am not sure. I honestly don't remember any of this.
Okay. Any other impressions that aren't just like hate?
I mean, I just feel like this whole thing is so confusingly set up. Like, it's pulling things from Tamers, but trying to make them good, but in a way that it doesn't. Why do they think that destroying Digimon is good when they have Digimon partners? Like, it just doesn't make any sense. I don't get it.
I mean, I'm going to talk more about the relationships between human and Digimon and the societal implications of that or whatever. But was it like so, did you find that so confused? Because I feel like it's actually pretty natural. I think it like breaks down when you think about it on a deeper level, but like, I think it's pretty natural to be like, yeah, we have humans, Digimon pairing up to take down the bad Digimon. Did you find that like so, you were like.
But they don't explain to me what is a bad Digimon. Like I get on a level of like, Dramozumon comes and breaks into a bank and they're like, that's bad. But the Digimon itself has no, like they even acknowledge it at some point. Like the Digimon itself has no morality. They're just like, it exists in the human world, therefore it's bad. And I'm like, okay, I guess.
But I still think that's something like breaks down when you think about it too much. But like on a basic level, it's like, yeah, they're Digimon attacking. We take care of the Digimon that are causing trouble. Like, was that so jarring that you were like, this is bad?
I mean, I don't.
Go ahead.
No, you.
Fine. I take issue with that. It's not an issue of thinking about it too hard. It's thinking about it at all. And like, on the one hand, I understand the idea that, oh, Digimon in the real world is bad because it has an effect on people's psyches, apparently. But like, it's not explained. And that's not really what I take issue with anyway. It's that the writing is just so bad. Like, I mean, you know how I never have expectations of anything? Even having no expectations, this was not pleasant to watch.
Yeah. And to the point of like, it's like, yes, mentally, I understand the Digimon thing, but like, why does Marcus not question anything? Why am I told that Yoshino is a top DATS agent when she's totally sidelined once any dude bros come? Like,
yeah.
I hate all of their characters.
Yeah, I mean, I do want to talk a bit about like our first impressions of these characters. We have a lengthy topic later on about Marcus, so we're going to hold off on that, I guess. But I mean, Yoshino, my first impression was like, oh yes, lots of bickering, and she's like introduces this top level agent, whatever. And I like how she's kind of like matching Marcus in not hot headedness, but like, you know, fighting back, and they have a nice bickering dynamic. But then like so quickly delegated to the background once. I mean, Marcus comes up in terms of ability, like her fighting ability. I mean, Lalamon's fighting ability is like so minimal compared to Marcus and GeoGreymon or whatever. And then once Thomas appears, then it's even more like she's relegated to the background, because then it's like it's all about Marcus and Thomas's relationship. And yeah, but I guess we'll also talk more about gender dynamics from there. I mean, also Thomas, what are our first impressions of Thomas?
Why does this show want me to think that he's sexy? Like, why is his introduction him? I mean, I guess his introduction is on a plane, but then his true introduction is like him in the shower and weird shots. And I'm like,
he's 14.
I think, I don't know. Yeah, you said they're 14, right, Jeffrey? And Yoshino is older.
Yoshino's like 18 or 19.
Yoshino's 19.
Yeah. God.
I think we'll talk more about that age disparity later. But so I think Marcus and Thomas are supposed to be 14, which puts them at grade 9, which in the US would be high school, but in Japan would be the last year of middle school. So yeah, that's there's some contention about like whether we consider them high schoolers or middle schoolers, because it's like in Japan the middle schoolers, but to us they feel like high schoolers, but because in the US they kind of are, but also like the freshman high schoolers, they're not that old. They're like the babies of high school. And also like Thomas, even it's the English title card sequence that like it says like the title of the episode, what is it called, like The Return of Thomas, and then like the girls like woo, I forget the actual noise they make, but they woo after Thomas's name is first mentioned there, which is not a thing in the Japanese version, I checked. Okay. I like that addition in the dub, but and they totally do giggle and stuff in the I guess it's them giggling. Yeah, not that it was cute, but yeah, they definitely are much more. They're so into Thomas that I guess as an audience we are supposed to be too. And
he's a celebrity.
It's also super creepy for adults to be into a middle schooler.
Yeah, I'm kind of creeped out by that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's pretty common in anime, and I guess it's also pretty common.
Not on this level.
It's pretty. It's pretty everywhere. I was
not
most
this bad.
I am most recently thinking about it because I listened to a podcast talking about Castle in the Sky from a bunch of people who aren't super well versed in anime, and they were talking about one of the scenes where I can't remember the main character in Castle in the Sky's name, but she does something cute and like a bunch of middle-aged men are all like swooning over her because of how cute she is. And it's like to them they talked about how like that is really jarring. People who aren't used to anime, and people who are used to anime are like, yeah, that's pretty standard. I think it's so omnipresent that we don't really think about it too much, but like there's so much stuff where it's like a girl does a slightly cute thing and everyone's like, woo, we'll totally do whatever for you because you're so cute. you know, maybe it's not as quite as objectifying here as here, where they're like explicitly like, we like you, Thomas. But that kind of objectifying of kids, I think, is present to some degree a lot.
I guess what I don't like also is that they are, these protagonists are older than previous Digimon protagonists, but they feel much more annoyingly not adult. I don't want to say childish, because teenagers are hella annoying. Like, I'm not going to deny that. It's just that it's more frustrating to be like, I don't feel the difference in your age. If anything, the fact that you're older and still act super immature just really, really annoys me.
Yeah, I guess age-wise, I'm sure I'm not alone in thinking of them as being so old and being high school age and whatever. I mean, Yoshino's weird because she's supposed to graduate high school. That's so bizarre. But anyway, they are the age of Joe in 02, last year of middle school. Like, Joe was in last year of middle school. I think everyone else was either in second year of middle school or first year of middle school.
But is that helpful? Because Joe is
weren't they in high school?
Responsible one.
No, in 02, they were not in high school. Joe was taking entrance exams for high school.
I was thinking, never mind.
Oh, yeah. But, so, yeah, and it's like, in 02, the older kids, they are the wise ones. And so here we're like, introduced to them from the starting point of being older. And it's, I don't know, ages in Digimon are weird. Like Haru, the main character of Atmon, is like technically older than, not technically, is older than Masaru, at least by the end of the series, maybe not at the beginning. But so like, it definitely does not feel that much older. Anyway,
I mean, but it's even especially more jarring watching Tri now, because if they're supposed to be around the same age, like the Tri kids don't behave like this at all. Granted, I guess they are put into situations that we are supposed to find much more dire, but like...
Well, they're 2 or 3 years older, but whatever. I mean, I don't know.
But like Yoshino is older than all of them.
Yeah, Yoshino is... whatever. Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, I like the setting and framing of the season being all... It feels in many ways like a... In the ways that Frontier felt like a kind of like redo of Adventure, not redo, but you know, not really a reboot, just like taking taking some of the same elements and redoing with a similar different kind of take. I feel like in a lot of ways that felt like a shallow redo of Adventure, whereas I like how this is a retread of Tamer's real world setting with dealing with Digimon coming into the real world and everything. And I guess there's not really anything in this arc to really prove that it is not shallow. I guess this in the confines of this arc it still feels pretty shallow, but what I know coming up, I think it eventually goes beyond that.
Different enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't like it.
Ash, do you have any other first impressions?
No. Apart from just sort of harping on the bad writing again, in that one of the reasons I struggle with liking these characters is I don't feel immature so much as they don't feel like people. I see these writers trying to play with character archetypes, like it's the hothead and the cool one and the girl, and not really not fleshing them out, not making them, any of them have a consistent characterization for one thing, but also like consistent motivations. Like, I'm remembering why I didn't end up finishing watching this.
I actually was confused about that too. Like, it seemed like in one episode they would state a motivation of like, we need, you know, like episode one, the end of it, the commander is like, we need somebody like Marcus on our team since he was able to tame Agumon so quickly and he digivolved to GeoGreymon already, like, cool. And then the next episode is them immediately being like, nope, we've captured you and we're taking Agumon, we're sending Agumon back to the real world. And it's like, wait, what? That wasn't your motivation. And then they like keep pretending that that's their motivation until halfway through the episode where again they get in a fight and they're like, no, yeah, we want him to join Dats. I'm like, I thought that's what you wanted in the first place. I'm so confused.
I interpreted that as them using that as a transparent to us, a threat. Like, that's what they used to manipulate.
They did not behave in such a way that it was supposed to be manipulative to the audience. Like, they behaved like it was a real motivation. Guess.
And also, like, there's also some inconsistency with, like, why? Like, Agumon says that he never been to the digital world once they go. And so I guess they were keeping him prisoner in the real world for some reason, which, like, doesn't really, like, why would they do that? They don't seem to, like, have a consistent strategy of doing that. They seem to send Digimon to the digital world. So,
I mean, I have no idea what's going on with Agumon. And actually, Agumon is the only one who I feel like Marcus actually does try to ask him questions. And Agumon always deflects the question in some way, but I actually find that semi-realistic because I assume that Agumon just doesn't want to talk about it. So he's like, I'm just going to like silly. And plus he's supposed to be silly. So it's just like, I actually buy Agumon's reasons for not explaining any plot involved with him.
I guess. I guess the sad thing that I know from coming up, I don't think there's any like more to the mystery of Agumon or anything.
I took that as Agumon was born recently in the real world.
Which isn't again, a mechanic that really...
Right. And again, I don't remember anything about Agumon's origins, like if that's ever explained, but
I don't think also, it is.
Because Yoshino was surprised that he could talk. So I think there's a certain level of awareness that separates a sentient, partnerable Digimon from the rest of these Digimons. Digimons, wow, that just happened. That
Digimons are forever.
God. All right.
Yeah, and I guess I feel like we haven't talked about sentient Digimon versus non-sentient Digimon since Adventure. And I hadn't really considered how, like, there is a total weird divide. Like, the fact that, yeah.
But Digimon are all sentient?
We're thinking of
something else.
Whether they're able to talk. Yeah, I mean.
That's not sentient.
It's not, but it's also hard to judge sentience without being able to communicate with them. So, what is, whatever that word is, we don't have time to linger on it because we spent an hour trying to get this recording set up, so we need to go through things quickly. So, the last topic for this general impressions segment, do you have a favorite moment in the episode? This was kind of spurred by Patreon Marcus asking us this question. Any favorite moment in these first five episodes? I'll start off. Mine was definitely the Yoshino going to like getting the misleading instructions to go erase Marcus's memory, him like getting knocked out with a commercial break or whatever, and then coming back. Like in Japanese, it wasn't a commercial break, it was the opening song. But then comes back and Yoshino is just like forcibly introduced Agumon to the family and they're all just eating dinner or whatever, eating food happily. And it's like, oh, that whole thing just like blew the lid and they're all just a happy Agumon included family. Ashley, what's your favorite moment? Ashley, what's your favorite moment?
My favorite moment was when it ended.
Oh, that's mean.
I enjoyed Agumon. He was the only redeemable part.
Mm. Okay, back to Ashley.
Oh, go to Andrew.
Marcus punching Kakatorimon in the face because that is when I realized Digimon was coming back in the day.
I thought you were going to say because it's hashtag relatable.
I'm gonna go with something when Marcus's sister walks past Yoshino and Marcus and is like, you two fight like an old married couple. I like Marcus's little sister.
She's pretty cool. She also has the voice of Rika, so
I noticed.
She gets instant points.
Honestly, his family is the best in this show.
Okay. So now we're going to move on to our game show Gotai segment. This is going to be the first time where we keep score for the season. So we're going to be building up points over the season. And so starting with a clean slate, we all have 0 points. We've tried the segment out and tried the various things before with episode 500 and the last try episode and stuff. But now we're going to start from scratch and build it up over the season. So we're going to use the placement. We're going to use the game show Gotai segment from Try Chapter 5 as a placement round to decide who gets to like get the most advantageous positions in the first lightning question. So based on that, like Ashley got 57 points, Ashley was first place with 57 points, then Andrew second place with 50, and Asher in third, and me in fourth. So the first lightning question, it's the Price is Right style guessing the percentage of people from a Twitter poll that guessed that answered a particular way. Price is Right style rules, so choose the closest number without going over. And so since I got the last place, I had the first guess. So the question is, who is the best of the main three DATS kids? And so there were around 50 votes, and we're going to guess what percentage of people chose Yoshino.
They're first.
Yeah, I'm first, and I will guess 30. Okay, Asher, you're second.
0.
Whoa!
16.
Ashley. So I guess 30, Asher 0, Andrew 16.
Oh, man. 20?
Why not just do 17, Ashley? Do you remember how Price is Right style rules work? You never do.
Sure, 17. Why not?
Okay. So the answer was 33. Who guessed 30? That was me. I win.
Wow.
Oh, wait, sorry. I should have been writing this down. So I was 30. Asher was 16. Asher was 0. Andrew was 16, Ashley was 0, and I went with 33. Okay, lightning question number 2. I'm out of the game. I wish I wasn't out of the game. That wasn't what I wanted. Okay, the question number 2. Which is the best partner of the 3 main Dats kids? So again, around 50 votes, and we're going to guess how many people voted. So the choices were Agumon, Lalamon, and Galmon, and we're going to guess who voted, how many people voted, what percentage of people voted for Galmon. So Asher, what do you guess?
40. Okay.
Andrew?
25.
Ashley?
26.
I think it should have gone with 41. The correct answer...
Really?
I mean, I don't know what the answer is. The correct answer was 42. Asher is second place. Okay, so round 1 is DigiFeud. Okay, so now, based on the results of the lightning question, it's me versus Asher. Asher, you're there, right?
I should be. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Okay, and so Ashley will present the question, and it's heads up between me and Asher. Go, Ashley.
Question. Digimon Savers reused one of the franchise's most iconic characters as the main partner Digimon. If the next Digimon season wanted to cash in on love for a fan-favorite Digimon, which Digimon would they use?
Bzz.
Okay, Jeff?
Gabumon.
Nope.
No?
Nope.
Make a bzz. Make a bad
bzz. Okay, all right, Asher, what's your guess?
fan favorite Digimon.
I know what I should have picked.
There are 5 answers.
There are 5 answers. Terriermon.
Ding!
That's what I should have done.
Yay!
Yay!
Like, tell us which slot it was. So that was the third? Was it the third?
It was the 4th.
Okay. So, Ash, now you get to choose. Do you want to keep playing in the question, or do you want to pass it to me? 4 more answers on the board.
I want to pass.
Okay.
Oof. All right. Jeffrey, let's hear it.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Terry was the only one I was like definitely knew would be up there. And it's 4th? 4th.
Yep.
Jeez.
I'm not going to do the thing where I give you a hint because that's
stupid. No. Yeah, it's cheating. That is hella tough. I see why Ash passed the question. Renamon. What? Why does everyone have terrible taste? Oh, jeez.
Wait, I missed it. What was that guess?
Renamon.
Oh, I'm glad I passed.
You have 2 more chances, Jeffrey.
Ooh. There probably are some that aren't in the anime itself, and that's why people voted for them. But like as a main character partner,
don't Jeff, just don't overcomplicate this.
Andrew, shut up.
But
don't give him hints.
Okay, Vemon.
Ding.
Which place?
5th.
Oh, jeez.
That's the one that we were like, oh, no, that should be included.
Oh, oof.
Jeez. So still have two more strikes.
Okay, Gilmon.
Ding. 2nd.
Okay.
Although the 2nd, 3rd, and the 4th are tied.
Oh, okay. Gilmon tied with Terriermon, huh? Okay. Are there any other love Digimon? so I only have 1 strike, right?
Yes, you only have 1 strike, and there are 2 things left on the board.
Are there any Digimon that people love from... Galmon? No, I don't want to say Galmon, because Galmon's, I feel like, too obscure. Especially if, like, Renamon is included. That's sad. Gilmon and Terriermon are tied, and Renamon isn't even there.
Renamon was tied for, like, 6th or whatever.
Oh, okay. I guess? I don't think this is right, but I guess I have to do it, to be sure. Tentomon.
Bzz.
Yeah. No, I can't see him being the main character, but also, I can't think of any other Digimon from Season 1, especially if Galmon's not included. So... this is so tough. I think we should have just gone with 4 because it's so tough to think of more answers.
You got Vemon.
I know. I'm just saying, like, there's still 2 more to go. I guess only 1 more strike, though.
You only have 1 more strike, and then Asher gets the strike out.
Oh, right, yeah. If I don't get it right, then Ash has to guess one. Go with Lopmon. No, that's bad, but I can't think of anything else. Okay. Okay, wrong. Asher, you get 1 guess, and if you get one of the remaining 2 on the board, then you get all the points.
But I only get 1 guess.
Yeah.
And if none get any points, right?
No, Jeff gets the points if you don't get it.
Oh, okay.
pressure's on now.
This is a tough question.
It is a tough question.
You came up with it, didn't you, Jeff?
I don't. I didn't think about the answer, though. For next time, I should add like a timer just to prevent me taking too long.
is questionable. Bioman.
Bioman? I'm so mad at you, Asher. Gomamon was number one.
Oh.
At 19.
You don't want to know who number three was.
Yeah, who was number three?
Patamon.
Oh, duh. Jesus. Best
Pat. I was like, no, no one will vote for him. Huh.
I kept thinking, I was like, who else could be from Adventure? Tentomon.
Tentomon.
I mean, I was like, he's kind of like, he explains everything, and like, Izzy's so iconic, whatever. No, okay. So I got 39 points for that. Yeah. And now, because I got more points, I go at the back end of the lightning round guesses. So it's me first, then Asher, then Andrew, then Ashley. Okay, so lightning question number three. Which is the best Data Squad main champion / adult Digivolution? We got around 30 points, and we're going to guess. So the choices are Geogreymon, Sunflamon, and Galgamon. We're going to guess how many people, we're going to guess what percentage of people voted for Geogreymon. I start off, and I'll guess 50. Asher?
70.
Andrew?
39.
Ashley? Remember, 51. Ashley. Okay, I was like...
51.
The optimal strategy is to do one over everyone else, or zero or one. Okay, so the correct answer was 57, so Ashley wins. So Ashley going into the round two, and... Okay, lightning question number four. Which is the better DATS computer operator? Miki with purple hair, or Megumi with blonde hair? We got around 30 votes, so we're going to guess the percentage. I'll start off... We're going to guess for Miki. I guess I'll put 50, because I don't know. Asher, what do you put?
I'm going to go with 40 to be safe.
Andrew?
I'm going to go with 39.
No.
Why?
Andrew, it's not how you play this game.
Too late. He messed up.
Just a reminder for everyone, the optimal strategy is to do one over everyone else, or anyone else's pick. Not one under, which is the worst strategy. The correct answer was 64.
Oh,
so I win.
Wow.
Ooh.
Hi, Jeff.
I didn't know people felt so strongly about these characters who have no personalities.
My strategy is to keep reusing this question every episode and see how the answers change over time.
Oh, my God.
Now it's time for round two, prediction jurisdiction, between me and Ashley. And the question we're going to be predicting for each other is another DNA / spirit / Leomon, which is our digi-friendly F. Mary Kill version, where we need to, the choices are who we want to digivolve, DNA digivolve with, basically fuse with, who we want to spirit evolve into, or who we want to Leomon / kill. And we basically get, to make it comparable to the digifeud points, we get, for one correct match, we get 25 points, and for a full match of all three, you get 50 points. All right, so Ash is going to lead, since I am a participant.
Yes. So, Ashley, if you could cover your ears.
Hi.
Alrighty. So, Jeff. Wait, am I not? Okay. So, Jeff, of these three Digimon, who would Ashley pick to DNA Digivolve with, Spirit Evolve into, or Leomon?
What are the Digimon?
Yes. Oh, they're not Digimon.
Oh.
They right. are, in fact, Marcus, Thomas, and Yoshino.
Okay, I'm going to say that Ashley would choose to Leomon Marcus, definitely. She definitely wants to punch Marcus in the face, so she'll Leomon Marcus, and she'll Spirit Evolve into Thomas and DNA Digivolve with Yoshino.
All right, and then write down your answers secretly
okay.
in the secret chat. All right, Ashley.
Hello, yes.
Hello.
Hello.
So, I would like to ask you,
yes.
who would you like to DNA digivolve with, spirit evolve into, or Leomon, aka kill? Of these three. You ready? So you're answering for yourself.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. The three are Marcus, Thomas, and Yoshino.
Ah!
I know, right?
I hate all of them. Okay. Leomon, Yoshino. Yes. I'm going to go with it. How are DNA Digivolve and Spirit Evolve different? Now I'm just confused.
I mean, Spirit Evolve...
Yeah, one of these used to be partner.
No. I mean, it's like Spirit Evolve into, like, you become that one, or you fuse with them. DNA Digivolve is fusing with them versus, like, inhabiting their body. and their life.
It's a there's a little overlap, Jeff.
Yeah. I like
that. Okay, we can consider that for the next round.
Who do I want to become? Spirit, spirit evolve into Thomas. Therefore, DNA digivolve with Marcus.
Ugh.
We become some angry, angry punching machine.
Are those your final, is your final answer? Is your final answer?
We're
that
doomed.
Would be very powerful.
Yeah, very that's powerful. My final answer.
Really? I could have sworn you wanted to kill Marcus.
Yeah, Jeff totally failed.
Wait, no, I got one right, I think, right?
No.
I can't stand any of them. It's really hard.
You chose to...
Spirit no, with Jeff totally...
Yeah, I got them all wrong. No, yeah,
you got them all wrong.
No, no, no. I got Spirit Evolve into Thomas right.
Oh, okay. All
so right. I get 25 points.
Cool.
All right. Now, Ashley, you guess for Jeff. Guess
I think Jeff's I'm going to get this horribly wrong. Does Jeff want to kill? Yeah, I have no idea. think about this. Jeff, kind of likes Marcus, so he's definitely not going to kill him. Jeff hates Thomas. I don't know how Jeff feels about Thomas. I think Jeff is going to go, God, I'm going to be so wrong.
To be fair, this is an incredibly terrible question.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Jeff's going to DNA digivolve with Thomas, spirit evolve into Marcus, and also kill Yoshino.
Well, you got one right.
Is it kill Yoshino?
Yeah.
Damn, no, I almost no. I think Jeff would go the same.
Wait, no. You got Spirit Evolve into Marcus right.
Oh.
I keep looking at the wrong thing.
So Ashley gets 25 points for getting one right.
Yes.
And so that leaves the totals. The new total for the season is me in first place with 64, Ashley in second place with 25, and then Ashley and Angie with 0 for now.
Woo.
And we'll keep building up points over the course of the season. Yeah, and I guess for next round we'll be smoother because we'll be more clear on the rules and everything. And we'll also, I think we'll institute timers for questions so things will be quicker. We'll get better at this. Okay, so now...
Wait, Jeff chose to fuse with Yoshino? What's wrong with you?
She's the most interesting personality out of all of them.
No! Can proceed.
I mean, I don't like how, she, lost her competency, but, that doesn't... Anyway. So I want to talk about the Digimon-human relationship. Societal relations, basically, that have been presented in the season so far. And because I think that aspect is really interesting. And because in a lot of, like we said, this is, feels like a kind of retooling of elements from Tamers. And but fundamentally, I think it's the opposite take of Dats is very Hypnos-esque, obviously. But I find it interesting how it's a complete flip opposite take on that. Instead of Hypnos being this shady, shady government agency that is evil, but actually turns out to be good in the end because they've come to be convinced based on the friendship of the kids or whatever. Instead, it's this is a decent agency from the start. These are adults who are already paired with Digimon. They are just, I think when we look at it, we see part of this is not so cool what they're doing. But at least what's presented in the show so far is they're actually the good guys. And it's a much more optimistic take than I think we're kind of used to with this kind of government agency. And the fact that we have adults partnering with Digimon for, I think, the first time since the 02 epilogue, it feels so idyllic because that epilogue was already no, there's no, it felt so kind of absurd to be everyone's going to get Digimon. It'll all be super happy and pretty and roses and everything. And so for the season to start off kind of at a similar place, it's obviously not Digimon aren't fully integrated into human society and everything, but having adults pair with Digimon, I know where the series is headed. I know in some ways it's going to be subverting this. There is more to the Digimon-human relationships, but I find this aspect kind of fascinating. And there's going to be more it has to say about it eventually that we can't really talk about now without spoiling things for Ashley and maybe Escher, depending on how far you got. But there are troubling things on the surface. Even though this is an agency that's presented as good and the actions they do are good, like we talked about in the first impressions, the kind of reasons why they're hunting Digimon and everything therein is kind of not really well established, and what is established is bordering on problematic, the power dynamics of basically using Digimon to help hunt Digimon and not really being clear on why they're being hunted and what they're being hunted for and what they're doing with them after they're hunted is unsettling. What I find, and there are several levels in which I find unsettling, the fact that Digimon are not really it makes sense. Like, there are Digimon rampaging in the real world. You need to deal with it. You need to help the people who could possibly be hurt from that. But especially with Jirmojimon. Jirmojimon is the, like, big red flag in this, where it's like, Jirmojimon, I guess it's that we saw more from Jirmojimon's perspective than Dats did. But we saw that he was clearly just, like, feeding off of the human's emotions and helping them out and causing harm, sure. But, like, they stopped him from causing harm and he fled to the digital world. And then having to go and hunt him down, like, I'm not alone, right, in finding that, like, I think Ashley and I talked about offline, but, like, that was bizarre, right? Like, there's no reason presented in world for, like, them to need to go hunt him down. It just felt like...
Yeah.
Like, I don't think there's ever... I think it's basically, like, a loose plot threading of needing to have a reason for them to have an expedition to the digital world, to present the digital world early on. And everything that's been presented instead makes them seem villainous, almost, that it's like this poor Digimon, like, especially giving him the point of view in that in the first episode with him, with Jirmojimon. I don't know how I was supposed to read it, aside from them going and terminating this Digimon that was all he was doing.
They did give a reason, but it was a really weak reason. It was like, oh, Jirmojimon might go round up other Digimon to get them to come to the human world. I guess there's an idea that, like, most Digimon in the digital world don't, for some reason, know about the human world, or at least don't know how to access it. But it's a super flimsy reason, and there was no reason for Thomas to go in there.
Yeah. It didn't seem like Jirmojimon, like, strategically found his way into the digital world, or into the human world. It felt like he kind of accidentally got displaced or whatever. And yeah. Well,
reason that it bothers me is that, like, it feels super like we just need to punish this Digimon. Yeah. Where, again, I don't think that they had, like, Jirmojimon has no sense of human morality. So he does not know that he, like, breaking into ATMs is bad and whatever. And the other problematic thing, actually, that I found was a different metaphor that happened early on in the second episode, when they're trying to be like, we're going to send Agumon back to the digital world. And Marcus is like, Marcus blatantly calls out, like, you use Digimon to go hunt other Digimon. Isn't that wrong? And then Lalamon says something about, like, when police break the speed limit, like, they don't get a ticket because they've done the bad thing to go catch somebody who's speeding. And then Marcus is like, yeah, okay, you're right. And I'm like, no, that argument is like... Okay, so police have no accountability is kind of like the really, really slippery slope of, like, that argument. And I'm like, no, police officers don't just get to break the law. Like, they're not just speeding. They have sirens on. They're, like, warning other people as they chase somebody to, like, get out of the way, which is the difference in between a normal speeder and a police speeder.
Right, but actually, I feel like your point doesn't really hold here, because it's like, right, it is, I think it would be a faulty slippery slope argument to take the speeding analogy and then conclude that police should have no accountability. And I think, like you're saying, there is a clear difference between police speeding and police officers going over the line because they have no accountability. And I think it's also clear in this case that the Digimon, like, have pairing up with Digimon to fight against reckless Digimon that are causing damage is very, like, that, like, you know, Yoshino and Lalamon, like, Lalamon existing in the human world is not an existential threat to people's lives like Kakatorimon attacking a McDonald's is. So, yeah, I feel like in both cases, the slippery slope argument is a total fallacy there. But maybe it's not the best counter or, like, explanation.
Well,
or whatever.
Can I jump in here and say that, I mean, so what Dats is doing is hunting Digimon with Digimon, right?
Yeah.
But what the Digimon are doing is not hunting humans. So it, rather than a speeding analogy, it really is more like, do the police get in trouble if they attack someone? And they do. So it's a faulty premise to start with. I don't think anybody is arguing that police should have no accountability here. What we're arguing is that, like, Dats should have accountability.
Yeah. I feel like the attacking thing also isn't a super great analogy, because, like, yeah, like, people shouldn't fire guns at random, but, like, if a police officer needs to shoot a gunman to get them to subdue them.
My problem with it was, like, particularly in America, it's like, no, we are having the problem where police lack accountability. And it's like, I feel like that's the question of, like, how accountable is Dats? Like, I don't trust Dats.
Like, I think it is a totally valid question to ask, but I feel like that wasn't, like, really, like, I feel like Marx's argument of, like, you're hypocrites because you're using, you have Digimon too. I feel like that was him using slippery slope logic, and then that logic
isn't smart.
but I'm saying, like, I think that was slippery slope logic, and, like, there's a clear reason why what Dats is doing is different. The question of, like, are they accountable, and they don't seem to be, and that's a totally different thing, and is you know, a problem. And I think that will actually be more relevant later on based on what I remember of some people who are associated with that. But so I guess we'll get to that. I'm trying to think, there was something else that Ashley brought up that you had 2 points. What was the first one?
That's a good question.
Because I was like, I really want to respond to that, but then you went into this bigger second topic.
Jirmojima not having morality. Oh,
yeah, Jirmojima not having morality. Like, I thought, I don't remember if this pattern holds out further or if it just from, which one was it in this episode? There was Jirmojimon and there was the, not the Kakatoriumon, not the Merimon. What was the other?
Kudemon, I think it's called. The Kunemon. Little bug guy. Kunemon,
yeah, yeah. The two of them both seem to be responding on the desires of humans. So right. I thought, like, I don't remember how this holds out later on, but like, I think where it's going is that like the Digimon are being summoned to the human world based on humans' emotions. So it feels especially unsettling to me to be about punishing the Digimon for them just being conduits for human excesses of human emotion. And yeah, it makes sense when you need to like quell the threat, like get rid of the threat. And like the Digimon are the things that are making it get out of control, or whatever. So that makes sense. But when it becomes about like subduing them and punishing them for transgressions after the fact that they're not a threat anymore, that's where it seems like, oh, they were just, you know, like being right. used by the humans almost. And I don't entirely think this is like a fault of the writing for like getting it wrong or like having this weird accidental. Because I think it's going to be addressing these themes more directly later on.
But that's still, you can't just be like, well, I'm going to address it as a theme later.
No,
it made no sense in world. Like,
I feel like maybe the fact that it is unsettling now is going to fit into like, is slightly purposeful at least.
Okay.
But yeah. And
the only reason I not forgive, but like understand the logic is because they are young, stupid dude bros who want to make a point about themselves.
But they're being, I mean, Thomas and Marcus, you know, brashly go into the digital world because there's like a, I forget how it's been spotted exactly, but the DATS still as an organization wants to get Jirmojimon, right? Like, and once they go do it, they're like told like good job or whatever. So clearly it's not just them being hot-headed teenagers. It's also like the bureaucracy also desired that outcome. So
I don't know. I don't like it.
yeah, basically. And I also just think, like I was saying, like the idyllicness of having adult partners with Digimon and everything. Like I just feel like in general, this season is showing more symbiosis, to quote a tri-term, between human and Digimon, and how, like, you know, obviously DATS is kind of like living this. I just feel like it's so bizarre to have like the Digimon and human partnership institutionalized in a way that's never happened to Digimon before. That's like, it's not just like this rare exception that kids come along and they're like, we're going to show you that Digimon and human can be friends. It's like, here is this government agency where that is a thing. And I don't know if that's good or bad, but
depends on if it's the government agency you trust.
Yeah. And
it is not one of the government agencies I currently trust.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, like, in terms of accountability, it's going to go the route of, like, I mean, actually, you haven't seen the Captain America Civil War movie, but a lot of the central debate in that movie is about, like, whether superheroes should be accountable. And it kind of takes a cop out because it's like, in our real world, I feel like they need to be accountable to people. But because in the fictional world, they are like the models of justice and like are the protagonists, it's like, it feels like making them accountable to people is more like shackling them. And because we know they are super good people, that feels wrong. But like picturing in our real world, government agencies being like, we are, or, you know, people sponsored by government being like, we are the model of justice and we don't need to be accountable to people, feels totally wrong. And I feel like that's eventually the route that's going to go, where it's like, we don't really doubt whether they should be accountable. We don't really think they should be accountable to people because we know that Samson is a great guy or Marcus is a great guy. So like,
oh no, that's horrible.
I mean, I just feel like that's the way a lot of media goes, because it's hard to like, it's hard to put us in the protagonist's shoes and then also be like, also the protagonist needs to be accountable to people who, the whims of the everyday people. I don't know if any stories actually handle that balance well in terms of realism. I think it might just be one of those things that, like, realism doesn't match up with fictional things that are satisfying in fiction.
Great. Yeah.
Let's talk about gender.
That's great. I hate Yoshino.
Okay, wait. Yoshino.
Wait.
I also, I don't hate Yoshino. I hate the fact that the show, the treatment of Yoshino, the fact that she is sidelined so easily. But I feel like Yoshino So in your notes, you compare her to Zoe, and I'll let you get to that. But I'll let you finish, but Zoe was had the best album of all. Anyway, but I feel like Yoshino had so much more personality, and like, I'm already seeing the flaw in my logic as I say it out loud. Proceed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm really disgusted that the show, because it is prior to Marcus and what's his stupid name, Thomas, coming.
The Tank Engine.
Yes, Thomas the Tank Engine coming. That one of the first lines of the show is about how Yoshino is a top DATS agent and they need to send her to find Raptor One because only a skilled DATS agent can take care of the situation. And that is never, ever shown in the show at all.
Or at least the first five.
I have no confidence that will happen in the remaining 45 either, but you know.
Yeah, I want to remember, not so sure either.
43.
I don't know how many episodes there are in the season.
There's like 48.
Wow, it just gets shorter and shorter because it's badder and badder.
No. That's not why.
Is it not why? Okay.
I just feel like comparing her to Zoe, like Zoe in a lot of ways felt very flat in addition to, like, her personality felt very flat, like in addition to not being competent fighting wise, and like the way she was fighting was always so, I don't want to say like sexualized, but like bordering on sexualized. And
bro, it was straight up sexualized.
Okay. It was sexualized, but I also feel awkward talking about this little girl being sexualized. So,
well, anime.
You should.
Yeah. So in Adventure and 02, Sora, Mimi, Yoli, Kari are not, like, they digivolve fine and beat the thing, right? Like, that's pretty much how this goes. It's how I remember it going. We're just going to go with it. Then in Tamers, it's like, oh yes, Rika's the best, but because Rika is so tortured by not actually being the best, I feel like there's still some problems there of, like, she is tortured by herself, so she loses a lot, and that's kind of annoying. Then you just get Zoe, where she just straight up digivolves and epically fails at beating.
I feel like Rika was like was presented as being the best in a lot of ways and the worst in terms of the ways that were required for digivolution. So like once it came to her needing to digivolve, like, yeah, she failed a lot there.
Great. So, and now Yoshino feels like it's just a continuation of Zoe, even though, again, we're told she's a top DATS agent. She has to fight one Digimon and then it somehow digivolves after she attacks it and had digivolved herself to Flowermon.
Some fun. Cool. Flowermon would be an absurd name.
That's a different Digimon, I'm pretty sure. Much.
Sunflowmon.
Whatevs.
I don't think Flowermon is a thing. I totally agree in just the general, first, like, as soon as I saw that, like, Yoshino gets her Digivolution episode and it's upstage by Marcus, I was like, oh my god, again. But Tom, like, he does the same thing in Thomas's introduction episode, so I feel like it's more about Marcus upstaging everyone.
No. In Thomas's introduction episode, it is shown that he defeats many Meramon on his own. There's just that one, or Demi Meramon, and there's just one that got away, and then they have to go to take care of that. Like, Thomas does do a thing by himself, unrelated to the thing that Marcus goes and does.
Okay, yeah. In broad strokes, it is still true that Thomas fails and Marcus needs to clean up a little bit, but Thomas fails in such a more competent way. He fails in a way where it's like, I cleaned up 99% and I left 1%.
Yeah.
Whereas Yoshino is like, doesn't do anything, and then Marcus needs to do everything. Like, so, like, Yoshino is 0% and Marcus
does
100%.
There's a big difference there in how I perceive that.
Yeah, there is a big difference. And yeah, like, I think someone could shrug off this criticism like, oh, no, this is about Marcus upstaging everyone, which A, is frustrating on its own, especially if we don't love Marcus that much yet, for him to be upstaging everyone. That's frustrating.
Are you ever going
to
love Marcus that much?
Maybe you will. I say, like, that, like, him punching everything is so absurd that it is lovable, and maybe it'll grow on you later on. But, like, especially the point where he tries to punch a boat, I hope that it'll grow on you by then. But,
Oh, that's, like, the next,
the next chunk. But anyway, so, yeah, the ways in which he upstages them, I feel like it reveals a lot of the gendered, unconscious gendered assumptions and writing traps. Because, you know, like, I actually don't know how much this line, the dub line about Yoshino being the top level agent or whatever, if that's a dub invention or if that's in the original version. But I think it's
a dub, because if you think about it, DATS isn't that big of an organization, even worldwide.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, unclear. It's literally within the first 30 seconds, so you could go.
Yeah, I could look it up.
Look at it really easy.
So, Yeah. But it's total, like, textbook telling instead of showing that, like, easy to just be like, oh, she's a top-level death agent. Then show her failing all the time. She's so top-level.
Yeah. Top-level. Yeah. I don't know. And the way that I perceive that Marcus and Thomas... It wasn't so much that Thomas even failed. It was kind of like we were shown that Marcus failed too earlier fighting that Demi-Meramon. So it's like, it's kind of Marcus just cleaning up Marcus's own mistake.
Yeah.
But not really like on Thomas.
Right. It's not really on Thomas. It's more like Thomas didn't get a race. Like Marcus beat Thomas to a race too. Like Thomas would have totally gotten that last Meramon as well. Like Demi-Meramon or whatever.
Yeah. So I'm just kind of like, whatever. Yeah. I don't like the ditzy death agents who just love 14-year-old blonde-haired, blue-eyed Thomas, genius boy. I hate Thomas. Thomas is like, why? Go away. I hate them all. That's the last line of my notes is literally, it's so painful because literally all these characters suck.
Ashley, I feel like we haven't heard you rage about gender.
Ashley pretty much covered it. There's only so much I can say about gender in Digimon as it progressively gets worse.
Right, that's why I tried to go back to Adventure and be like, this is how it feels like it has progressed from season one to now, and it has markedly gotten worse.
Do you think it's definitely gotten worse since Adventure? Do you think that this is a step down or up from Frontier so far?
I think it's a step down. Huh. Zoe at least got to succeed sometimes.
She didn't scan Digimon until like episode 30 something.
Yeah, well, she also got to like do things.
I think on a stairway of like 10 stairs, Adventure actually looks like it's closer up there now, at like a 7. And like Tamers is only like one step behind, and then Frontier goes to like maybe a 2. And so if Data Squad is a step up or down, it's minimal. Who cares? It's a 3 or a 1. Like, or it's the same level of 2 and they're all bad, you know? Like,
yeah.
I think, I mean, my opinion is that I like Zoe more than I like Yoshino at this moment. So right.
Yeah, whatever. And in the way that you're trying to say that Yoshino has more character, I'm like, why? Because she's brasher? Like, actually, the way that Yoshino reminds me a lot of the way that, like, Hitomi treats Vaughn in Escaflowne, but in a worse way, because I'm like, Yoshino has not proven to me that she has any useful qualities. Like, at least Hitomi's like, I have this magic power thing, like, that y'all want to use. Y'all are jerks to me, and like I try to help you and like heal your wounds and like blah blah blah, but and I'm just like, Yoshino's that, like, she's like, I hate Marcus, but I try to get him to put on his headgear and like I put band-aids on his face because I'm a girl and that's what I'm supposed to do, and also has no other useful quality, and I'm just like, no, I can't do it.
I guess, yeah, it's like when I was considering her character is basically just her brashness, which is like a very transparent layer on top of nothing.
It's the, can you hear the capitals in my voice as I say this? It's the strong female character idea that is not actually a strongly written female character. And it's meant to appeal to a male audience. Is that, oh, she's one of the guys, except she's not as good.
Yeah. Hmm. And I'm like, I don't buy this. No.
Yeah. In terms of, I mean, I guess I'm spoiling my favorite character, but I was going to pick my favorite character, my MVP, as being Marcus's mom. Partially because no one else really shines in these episodes as likable. But like,
I mean, I agree.
But I feel like Marcus's mom like has a similar kind of brashness without the... like, but it's not in a like trying to be one of the guys kind of way.
Marcus's mom is tricky because she's also just kind of silly.
Right. But she's silly like and kind of like in his face. And like, we don't get that much time with her, especially compared to Yoshino. And it might just be to like, we get so much more time with Yoshino too for the writers to expose gender biases and everything, and by making her a main character that needs to be subservient to Marcus in the end, those things shine through more. But
I mean, I think that there's a very definite gender bias thing, sexist bias thing, in the very fact that like Christy and I actually don't even know Marcus's mom's name.
Sarah,
great. that they are only Marcus's sister, Marcus's mom. They are defined in relation to someone else. Like, at least Yoshino is Yoshino, you know?
It's true. Yoshino, Thomas and Marcus's lackey.
Yoshino.
The trial of Marcus Demon. We're going to keep this segment short because we're running low on time because we had technical issues early on, so I'm going to try to speed things up and set a timer, a hard timer, 5 minutes. So this is the trial of Marcus Damon. It's kind of inspired by a Patreon suggestion, little mini letter. So we're going to start off reading that, and then we'll get into the trial. Okay, so this was from Tamer Theory/Andy Lusamon. I think for Adventure Zero 2, the writers were tossing around the idea of Digimon from outer space, which obviously didn't happen. However, after Tamers, I feel as though the writers wanted to have a similar thing to Hypnos, but as the good guys, which when you think about it is a genius idea. Kids like Digimon, kids like being spies, and if you can combine the two, then it's a winning formula. My problem with Marcus is his fist fighter Digivolution thing. The Digimon in Black, referring to Men in Black, we've talked with him in Patreon Slack about Men in Black before, so that's why I know the context of that. The Digimon in Black would have worked really well with Marcus being more like Will Smith, aka a normal kid. The arc could have had him, the arc could have been him growing into the role of Dats instead of he's naturally talented and destined for this one job. Instead, they have removed the character from the audience, elevating him and making him harder to relate to. Shame, because I really like the setup, just not our hero. So, leading to that, what do we think about Marcus as our hero?
Ooh, not my hero. Hashtag not my hero.
Yeah, it's not my hero. It's Boku no Hero.
Oh. No. Hashtag not Boku no Hero.
Hashtag Marcus is not Boku no Hero. Yeah. I mean, I don't really agree with the, like, I don't think, I mean, part of Tamer Theory's point was that, like, they made Marcus kind of, like, destined for the job. And I feel like it's not too far in that extreme, especially when, like, other seasons of Digimon are literally dealing in Digi-Destined and Digi-Destiny. I feel like instead this is more like Marcus is, quote-unquote, destined for the job because it's something that he likes a lot. You know, like, I feel like it's more like a natural pairing in that sense. I don't feel like it really removes him. I mean, it's certainly, like, his being the ultimate fighter makes him somewhat less relatable, but I don't think it's entirely in a, like, he's so special kind of way. Like, I think Thomas is definitely, like, so, supposed to be so elite that he's not super relatable to the audience. Marcus, I feel like, is just full of quirkiness. And I think people enjoy quirkiness, even if it doesn't make them relate to that specific quirk that they have. It makes you be like, oh, that's so cute.
It is just My Hero Academia.
Yeah, I guess I fell into that quirk thing. But yeah, I mean, I'm not super positive on Marcus yet. I'm still waiting to judge him. Asher and Andrew, what's your verdict on Marcus?
I mean, I personally like Marcus, but that's a bit of a bias. But
a bias as of a, what, though?
Because
I mean, a bias is just your personal preference. So why do you have that personal preference?
I just do. But
Andrew's secretly the ultimate fighter who goes around punching lots of people.
Yeah. This is double life.
Yeah.
Clearly. But he's not relatable, like you guys said.
Asher, what do you think about Marcus?
is what I think about Marcus. Like, I vaguely remember him getting less annoying. But right now, he doesn't listen to anyone. And that, I think, is what makes him not relatable. I don't care if he fights with his fists. I love things like Gurren Lagann and other things where people punch people. like I used to watch Dragon Ball Z. G Gundam. I love G Gundam. But Dobon listens to people sometimes.
Marcus listened to one person. He listened to that old guy once.
Yeah, that doesn't count because the old guy's just plot right now.
Also, wait, no. He doesn't actually. I mean, I actually really enjoyed that moment where he listens to the old guy because, like, the old guy, he, like, spins a metaphor about the flame that he, like, he's like, you need to go along with the flame and, like, spur it on. And, like, I feel like that was it worked on several levels because I feel like he was actually talking about the way he's handling Marcus. Like, he's basically been guiding Marcus, gave him the Digivice, and is now, like, in the shadows kind of, like, helping him. Whereas Dats is, like, more aggressively, like, no, we're going to take Agumon. Or, like, no, we're going to force you to work with us, whatever. That's kind of, like, confronting the flame head on, whereas he is just guiding it like the wind. And I was like, oh, that's a great metaphor. And what Marcus hears instead is, like, all he hears is the super literal, like, you can make the strong better. You can, like, make the fire stronger. And that's all he hears. And he's like, oh, okay. Like, he doesn't hear any metaphor at all. And yeah, I like that his, like, straight fire, like, hot-headedness interpretation of that.
Yeah, like, honestly, I have no problem with hotheads. I have no problem with dumb characters. I find them very enjoyable a lot of the time. I don't like Marcus because he doesn't care about anybody.
Except himself.
He cares about Agumon.
That's true.
And
why am I defending Marcus? I just...
I don't know. I don't know why you're defending Marcus.
I just want to make the facts clear.
That is true. He does care about Agumon, and I feel like that's the first time he's ever cared about anybody in his freaking life.
He cares about his sister.
We haven't seen that yet.
Okay.
That's true.
And also, that's... creep, like, it's not creepy to care about your sister, but, like, it's a creepy default that, like, oh, I have issues with the little sister trope in anime.
Oh, yeah, there's lots of really troubling places with those.
Yeah, and, like, I just feel like it doesn't count. I'm like, of course he cares about his little sister. It's a little sister. She's gonna probably, you know, she'll probably die tragically. I mean, that's not gonna happen. Spoilers.
There's also, like, I mean, we've seen like Tai being older brother, Matt being older brother. It's and I guess Tai was also an older brother of a little sister, but, like, I don't really love the, like, the way he shows him being a better older brother is being all, like, punchy and stuff, because I'm like, I don't know, I think that genders it even
he
more.
He has no father figure.
Yeah,
who cares? His mom is pretty cool, except that she only exists as mom.
So, Ashley, I think you wrote down these lessons, according to Marcus, that I assume you take issue with.
Yeah. What I hate Marcus for is his dumb lessons that he always tries to spout at you. In episode one, he's like, the ultimate fighter is always willing to make the ultimate sacrifice while fighting Agumon, and he just, like, won't give up. And I'm just like, no.
Yeah, no.
Like, and it goes into his next one where it's like, a real winner never shows cowardice, where you just never give up fighting a fight. I'm like, no. Good people know when to give up a fight and, like, regroup to fight another day.
And you also, like, don't you take issue with the whole, like, standing his ground?
Oh, yeah. He was like, concept. I will stand my ground. And I'm like, no, this is what's wrong with America right now, is that, like, literally America used to believe in, if somebody engages you in a fight, the first thing that you are responsible to do is try to disengage from the fight. Don't escalate the fight. You're supposed to try to run away. And now all we want to defend is, like, self-defense. Like, you know, they attack you, so you immediately attack them back. And it's like, no, that's not how this is supposed to go. And this is why so many people are angry and get killed dumbly.
And then, cool. Like, it also leads into focusing on retaliation over de-escalation, right? Like, that's kind of been borne out by the show. We're not reading too far into it. It's, like, borne out literally in the show. That's exactly what happened with Jirojimon. They don't, like, their priority should be, like, disengaging Jirojimon, removing Jirojimon from harm, which is explicitly what they're doing by, like, turning Digimon into Digi-Eggs and sending them back to the digital world. And he goes back to the digital world, and they're like, we need to go silence him, get rid of him. And I'm like, okay, so that's, like, clearly your philosophy. I think your point about, like, that's what's wrong with America. Okay, A, this is made for a Japanese audience initially and everything, like, so we're not assuming that's, like, explicitly referring to, like, American culture. Also, American culture has changed since then. But this is also, like, the dub was written by an American team for an American audience. So it's possible interpretation there. I also think it's just, like, a similar trend that, like, it's that kind of logic that can exist across cultures that has become super prominent in America and is frustrating and sad and disappointing.
Yeah, I'm not saying that it's supposed to be, like, related to American culture at all. Yeah. I'm just saying that it's a troubling trend that has led us to a really bad place recently. Right. So, like, maybe you should rethink that.
I just want to disclaim, because, like, there was an article, I mean, this episode will be coming up like maybe a month or two later, but, like, there was an article recently about Final Fantasy IX. I forget which gaming site wrote about it, but, like, describing, like, Final Fantasy IX as, like, being, like, only possible because it was pre-9/11. And it was, like, very much analyzing, like, the entire writing and framing of Final Fantasy IX as being very American-centric. And I'm like, okay. Like, it's fair to interpret it, but, like, talking about, like, how this can only be written pre-9/11, like, whatever. It was very American-centric, and I don't think that's what we're doing, but I just want to elaborate and explain.
I'm just saying that Marcus's logic taken to its conclusion has bad conclusions.
We see it. Like,
yeah. And then we talked about how his whole, like, harness the power, don't extinguish it, but all he hears is, like, yeah, so they punch, like, fight fire with fire. And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Like, Oh, Marcus. And, like, that only works in this very specific instance where he's like, I need to be able to punch it. Like, let me make it stronger before I go punch it. Marcus, get away. Okay, I'm
going to
answer questions.
Also, just the last note of Marcus, like, I feel like it's so bizarre we haven't even mentioned it so far. Maybe it's just because it's so omnipresent that it's just, like, washed over us. But, like, the way his speech affectations, which I guess they add in the dub to fit the, like, I guess there's maybe no quite analogy the way he kind of talks, like, a kind of, like, thug-ish in Japanese a little bit. And so, like, him saying, like, toots, calling Yoshino toots, and, like, what are even the other things? Like, doll face, yeah, like, ugh. Those are like, you like this. Like those feel bizarre because they're not things any teenager would say, except unless they're from like the 50s or 60s.
Like musical, yeah. Like teenager.
Right, like we only experience that at least in like, you know, super old. Yeah, I don't know what I'm thinking, like musical things that are super old and dated, and then they're super gendered and like sexist and like whatever. You can be a shooting star. Answer questions. 5 minutes o'clock. Go.
What is up with the soundtrack?
I don't. It's a soundtrack. Why do they keep referring to him as Raptor One? Like, do they refer to any other Digimon by like weird code names? Like, they know he's Agumon. They have whatever technology to know what Digimon species are, and yet he's Raptor One.
They never refer to any, like, they don't call Dramojimon
whatever.
Mole One.
And I feel like, yeah, like it's like I thought at first it was supposed to be like a code name because they don't know what species he is, but they clearly know for other Digimon. So, why was the Meramon, like the whole like fighting fire with fire, making Demi Meramon stronger to defeat him? Like, under what principle is Meramon easier to punch than Demi Meramon?
There's more
fire to not have any physical presence.
I don't know, Digimon.
we're like, why was Dats keeping Agumon captive? Like, Oh, Thomas is supposed to be all like cool-headed and rational and whatever. But like when they're in the cave and he's like proving to Marcus how unstable it is, he like punches the wall to like show. Or no, he has Galmon punch the wall.
Yeah, yeah,
to show how unstable. Like, no, you're just making it more unstable. What are you doing? Oh, Thomas.
It's highly effective.
Yeah. Also pushing Thomas. Like Marcus is like carrying Thomas and like, oh, it whatever starts to show that. Marcus does show some caring for others there, but then he like throws him off the cliff, forgetting that he can't even walk.
Hey, we're gonna jump now. Hey, let's go.
Yeah, basically.
How does Dats explain all the damage that happens? Like, I get that they wipe memories, but then what do you? I don't see how there is a possible way that does not make people very, very concerned about a non-existent threat that escalates into a real threat into something.
Just random terror attacks.
Filming a movie.
Oh, okay.
That would be the adventure style.
I mean, Tokusatsu uses a lot of explosions, like a lot of pyrotechnics.
How does nobody get actually hurt in all of these things? I do enjoy that in the first episode when Kakutorimon throws the car near where Yoshino is, and Marcus sees that and he expresses no concern.
He's like, she's a top level agent, actually. She can handle this.
Cool.
Ridiculous dialogue draft, baby!
We each go around and pick our funniest, most ridiculous, or most touching line from the episode. We're only doing one because, I don't know, it's not that funny. I'm gonna go with this one. Should I go with that one? Yeah, I'll go with that one. From episode 2, when Marcus is afraid, can't find Agumon, goes downstairs, sees them all eating, I guess. And Marcus says,
how can you just sit here eating with all that's going on?
Thanks, because if I eat standing up, I don't feel good.
That isn't what I meant, you digital dimwit!
I love Agumon. That was one of my favorites.
Yeah, the way he delivers it, too, is real great.
Yeah.
And then I guess I'm going second, so yeah. I will go with... I'll go with this. I realize there were a couple good ones, but yeah, they're not so great to have two picks for this episode. Anyway, episode 3, when Yoshino, I guess episode 3, it's the one with the Demi Meramon. So it's after Marcus tries to do stuff and then comes back, and then Yoshino is like,
don't worry, Marcus, you didn't let us down. No one here at Dats actually thought you could do it anyway.
Such a great burn.
It was a pretty good burn.
See, she has some
character. I had that one written down too. No, because I've heard that joke before also.
Yeah, it's not novel, but...
No. All right. I'm going to go with this one for episode 5 just on sheer ridiculousness of it. Like, someone actually wrote this line and thought it was good enough to stay in this episode and be aired on television and go into the ears of people. So this is from episode 5, and honestly, I don't even remember what was happening. I think they were sneaking around. Agumon and Marcus were sneaking around trying to get into Dats so they could go to the digital world. And Agumon says,
"Quiet as a sleeping mime."
And I was like, "What? What?"
Extra quiet. Andrew's turn.
Okay, I'm going to also pick something from episode 3. And this is a really awkward dialogue between Miki and Megumi, the two Dats girls. And they're talking about Thomas.
Of course they are.
I forget which one says which, but one of them says,
"He's so on top of things. He so is."
What? That sounds dirty.
It sounds dirty when you emphasize it, but...
No, they both sound dirty.
I mean, it would have been dirty if, like, he's on top of things, and then the other one was like, "I want him on top of me." That's what I was afraid.
That's
like,
basically what...
When Andrew paused, I was like, oh no, I hope she didn't say that.
I hope she didn't.
I was like, that's not appropriate. It's inappropriate. Okay, and just a reminder, we have in the show notes for episode, we have a poll where you can go vote on your favorite Sudoku Saga draft pick. And that really doesn't do anything aside from stroke our egos and let us know who was best. And then we look at the end of the season and declare who was the best RDD picker. So please do that. And now it is time for Digimon Data Squad Mini Arc 1, Dats Intro Part 1.
Terminal Judgment!
Any last thoughts about the dark before we close it out?
It was garbage, and I'm mad at you for making me watch it. Like, I thought nothing top episode, whatever number episode that was, of Try, this just blew it out of the water.
Wow, that's a real condemnation right there. But I kind of agree. At least Try has characters I care about.
Yeah. Internet high five.
Yeah, I'm trying to find Asher's comments from when you watch Try and you're like, "I can't believe I had to watch that with my eyeballs." And then when you watch these episodes, he said, "I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'd rather have watched that last episode of Try than this." So.
That's how far we've come.
That thing I wrote on the Slack, and I stand by that, both of those.
Yeah, I still really like Savers. This is my first experience, my first exposure to Data Squad, and I think it's fine. I really don't think the like initial arc is whatever really what wooed me over to Savers in the first place, though. But I think it's just been fine. Okay. I think it has some like interesting world building or interesting world and things it eventually explores. But for now, it's just there. Andrew, any last thoughts before we do our MVPs?
It's not the worst opening arc, and it's not the best opening arc. It's just there. And honestly, I feel like Savers is definitely stronger, the stronger version of this story that they tried.
Okay, so Ashley, who's your MVP?
Christy.
Her like one line?
She had multiple lines. Don't get sassy with me.
Asher, who's your MVP?
Agumon.
Good choice. Andrew?
Marcus's mom.
I'll also go with Marcus's mom. Sarah? That seems so strange to me. I guess because I knew her Japanese name is like Sayuri. And I guess, okay, Sarah's a pretty good fit for that. But for some reason, Sarah does not scream like a Digimon name to me. Like, it could be like there being a Digimon character named like Rachel. It's like, okay.
Rachel.
Well, they're both biblical names, so.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so those are our MVPs for this arc. You should go, so that means people who pick them for the fantasy draft get points for that. Just a reminder for people to, if you don't know what the fantasy draft is, you guess which characters you want to pick as our MVPs, and you also pick a team, a DATS, is there a name for their pairing, their partnership? A DATS, it's not a squad, but a partnership. You pick a human and Digimon, and then we also vote on our favorite teams, so please do that for episode 502. You can predict what we're going to choose for the next arc. And before we close it out, Ashley, do you have any thoughts with this story? Do you have any, where do you think the story's going to go next? Not knowing. You're the most in the dark.
That we watch?
Yeah.
Just defeated your Mojimon. Okay. Gone to the digital world. I would guess that they have to start figuring out like why more Digimon are appearing. Start looking into that more. Now that Thomas is back, seems like a natural thing for him to investigate since he's such a genius or whatever. I've got to find out some more about a weird old man. I think some clear antagonist has to pop up. It's my prediction.
Now let's recommend some articulates. Plug, hug, plug, snug, rug.
Cool.
Actually, articulate a recommendation.
Okay. I'm going to go with, shockingly, the new John Green novel, which is called Turtles All the Way Down. I'm not sure who I'm recommending this to, because if you like viscerally hate the way that John Green writes and that all of his characters are too smart for their own good and they all have weird names, like, this isn't going to convert you. It has all of those things still. but I think it is actually my favorite John Green novel. I have a love-hate relationship with the things that make up a John Green novel. But I like this one. I thought it was a good balance between his normal heartbreak sadness and, like, it wasn't too much this time. And it was just real relatable. I think he was good at writing it because kind of relates to things that he's actually plagued with in terms of OCD and anxiety.
Is he secretly a turtle?
No, he's not secretly a turtle. I really, really liked the best friend character named Daisy. She was really funny. I really appreciated it. Yeah.
Cool.
I am going to recommend Netflix's version of The Magic School Bus, which is a pretty competent reboot and teaches science effectively. The characters are pretty decent. I mean, I've only seen a few of the episodes, but I like some of the interpretations of the new characters, which kind of fall into the same as the originals. And then my only real complaint is that some of the kids are hard to tell apart at times. And then I think it sets out what it wants to do. It teaches science effectively to children.
Yay.
So I'd like to recommend the mobile phone rhythm game called Demo, D-E-E-M-O. It follows the story of this mysterious black, kind of Slender Man looking figure. And the girl who falls into his abode from the sky, and how he plays the piano to help the tree grow and help her get back out to where she came from. The songs are very pretty. Some of them are really difficult. And it's a lot of fun. It really scratched that rhythm game itch that I have, since I have no access. Actually, I have no access to video games at all up here. I can't charge my DS. So, good game. Check it out.
I'll second that recommendation because I really like the songs. The piano music is really great. And apparently it just came out on Switch, so that's possible.
Although
it's one of the Switch games where it's just tablet mode. Like, you're just supposed to tap it like it's an iPad. So I don't know if that's not really making great use of the Switch, but it's still great music. Okay, I'm going to recommend a little game. I don't think anyone here has heard of it, called Danganronpa V3 Killing Harmo... Killing Harmony. People probably have heard Danganronpa by now. If you haven't heard Danganronpa, probably isn't the best game to play. Play the other ones first. But if you have any interest in Danganronpa, this game is fantastic. It's great. There have been Danganronpa things in the past several years since 1 and 2 came out that have been not so great, and this is basically return to form. It's amazing. It's traditional Danganronpa gameplay. It's fantastic. The puzzle boxes are great. The story is great. It goes in really interesting directions, and I think says more than any Danganronpa has in the past, and is really thought-provoking and exciting and a fun emotional roller coaster. So yeah, play it. I can't really talk about, there's so little I can talk about it without spoiling things, and I'm trying to write a review for it now. I guess by this point it'll be out by several months by that point this episode comes out, but if you still haven't played it, definitely go do that. This has been Podigest 501, covering Digimon Data Squad episodes 1 through 5. You should let us know your comments about this episode, about the Digimon episode covered, at podigest.com/501. Let us know what you thought about our thoughts about Marcus, how wrong we are, how much you love Punchy Little Boy, and how much you are angry at us for not liking Data Squad enough. That's what I would think. You should also go to podigest.com/501 to vote on your favorite ridiculous dialogue draft pick, to rate the episodes we covered, episodes 1 through 5. And you can also send your thoughts to us on social media. We are Podigest on Twitter, Tumblr, and Facebook. Email podigest@gmail.com. You can comment on the With the Will thread and our Reddit r/Digimon thread, or by punching every Digimon you see, and we'll get the message. Ashley, can you just read it instead?
I'll read it.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Was I gone?
Back. You're back.
I was trying so hard. All right. I was reading. talking and I couldn't tell if you could hear me. All right. You can also answer our voicemail question if you want to be featured in a feedback episode. This episode's question is Marcus a good boy? You can either call 913-CALUMON if you're in the U.S. or email an audio recording of 90 seconds or less to podigious@gmail.com.
Special thanks to Extra Enemon for our new Agumon logo for Season 5 and to our prodigious Patrimon supporters who help make everything we do possible. Special thanks to our current champion Patrimon, Diabjomon, the infamous Tokujo on Twitter, Dizzy Dizumi at Dizzy and Loss on Twitter, Joe Kido, Kailunamon, and Sam Kruagamon, who's also on the Moncast. Our ultimate Patrimon, Andy Lusamon, David Gramon, and Michael Penne, and our mega Patrimon, Marcus. We finally met Marcus! Woo!
Hopefully, Patrimon Marcus is not offended by our trial of Marcus.
He's not, like, actually Dad's Marcus.
If people want to follow us, keep up with what we're doing, Ashley, where can they find you?
At AshMcD00 on Twitter.
Asher?
AsherDashery on Tumblr.
Ash, I think there's something wrong with your mute program, like, a lot wrong with it. Yeah. We've had a lot of trouble with Ash recording in Israel and everything, so.
I'm Asher Dash on Tumblr. I don't know if you can hear me at all.
We can hear you now. Yeah, we can. Okay. Andrew.
Drew Softman at Twitter.
And I'm definitely Jeff on Twitter. And if you want to follow the show and keep up with updates about our episode recordings and everything, and also see funny images and GIFs related to the show, we are Podigious on Twitter, Tumblr, and Facebook. And maybe by the time this comes out on Instagram, I'm investigating that. I don't know what kind of stuff goes on Instagram, but we do a lot of image content anyway, and maybe I'll put up other things like images of us like recording setup or something. I don't know. I'm just in a closet. Anyway.
I'm just in a closet.
Share the podcast with friends who have been written with personalities, and don't share the podcast with opponents of Stand Your Ground.
And join us next week as we close out the DATS intro arc with Data Squad episodes 6 through 11. Bye.
Bye.
And remember, never stop digivolving. Welcome to Podigious. Someone bolded my thing for me.
Oh, really?
I mean, maybe because someone redid the color or something.
I have no idea. I did not do it.
I like all these flame puns, though.
Oh, of course you do. That's why somebody had to choose for you, because you think all your funds are punny, and we're like, no, they're actually not.
Yes, I do think all my funds are punny, Ashley.
What? No. You said that's not what I said.
Yes, it is.
That is absolutely what you said, Ashley. I'm sorry.
We have a record of it.
Well, there you go. A brilliant outro clip for you.
Grandiloquent Matt goes.
Okay.
What does this mean?
Grandiloquent means he talks fancy. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but Grandiloquent Matt goes into the digital world to merciless. Grandiloquent.
Yeah, the only thing we really, like, disagreed on that would be, like, an open-ended question is liking Marcus or not.
Does DATS have the right level of accountability?
Do you find Marcus relatable?
Do you relate to Marcus?
Do you like Marcus? Is Marcus your precious little boy? Is Marcus a good boy?
Can we please just ask, is Marcus a good boy?
Okay.
Well, Marcus punched his way into our hearts.
I think it should be, is Marcus a good boy?